Hey, welcome in to First Draft. No joke here. The NFL Draft is this month. That's right. It is April 1st. We are just a few weeks away from the start of the 2024 NFL Draft. I am Field Yates, and of course, you know the man who helped make this event what it is. That is Mr. Mel Kiper Jr. Mel, how was your weekend and your holiday?
Great, great. Happy Easter, everybody. And I'll tell you, a lot of action going on this week, Field. Yeah. You got a two-round mock coming out. I'm going to be preparing for my mock 4.0 next week. And we got the big board. The big board comes out every week, Field, and there's always changes. We're kind of fine-tuning it now. Pro day's just about over. A lot to kind of iron out and try to figure out between now and April 25th. But I think we're making headway. I think we're getting to the end pretty soon.
Yeah, the good news is, Mel, that there's not a lot of things left on the ledger that can alter your grade. As you said, pro days are over. There are a couple of players that were injured that will do a private pro day, whether it's a Johnny Newton, a Cooper DeJean, players like that. But generally speaking, most of the information on the players is already behind us. So coming up on the show, we'll dive deep into Mel's latest top 25 with some notable changes and alterations along the way. And a reminder that the top 25 ranking is not always just how you see it, but also sort of interpreting what you hear from around the league and using that to input some of your thoughts on that top 25. But we're going to start, Mel, with a pro day recap just quickly on Michael Penix Jr. and the Washington Huskies, who I had the chance to go out and see them in Seattle this past Thursday, Mel. And before I offer up my thoughts, what are sort of your latest estimation of where you think Michael Penix could hear his name called in the draft here?
I'd say so. A lot of different opinions on where he could go. If you're okay with the medical, that's the big thing. You're okay, shoulder and knee issues at Indiana. The way he played the 2 years at Washington, his accuracy when he gets time to throw, obviously off-platform throws. You saw him do it on occasion, but that's not his forte. Clean pocket. He can all levels be accurate throwing the football field. I think when you look at Michael Penix Jr., wouldn't be shocked if he went in the top 15. We got, you know, sitting there at Minnesota at 11, Denver at 12. If somebody traded into the late first round from the second to get him, if he dropped into second like Will Levis did, wouldn't shock me. I think right now, I don't know where you have him in your mock field, but I'm gonna be a guy thinking seriously about first round somewhere for Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah, I won't spoil the entirety of the two-round mock draft, which debuts on Wednesday on ESPN, Mel, but I will say that he found his way in the top of the second round because I'm like you. I can see the range being as high as the top 15 picks from Michael Penix Jr. I could also see it being somewhere in that second round because of teams perhaps wondering about how well his body will hold up with four separate season-ending injuries. Safe to say that there are a lot of mixed opinions on Penix, as you just relayed, Mel. I will note that from the pro day, I'll continue to say this, watching Michael Penix Jr. throw in person is a treat. The ball absolutely flies off of his hand. We saw that during the pro day throwing session, which concluded the day of festivities. But prior to that, Mel, he did something that I was not expecting, which was him taking part in both a vertical jump and a 40-yard dash with a broad jump mixed in there as well. And he jumped 36.5 inches on the vertical, ran a 40 that, you know, as you know, Mel, everybody's got a different stopwatch here at Pro Days, but I was in a cluster of scouts and there were a bunch of people exchanging times. Everybody there had him between 4.56 and 4.59. So he showed off more athleticism, Mel, than I think maybe the public gives him credit for, which is a little bit of a reminder that what a player is asked to do at the college or even pro, heck, even Pop Warner level, is not exclusively what he's capable of doing, but in some cases, it's what the offense needed him to do. So maybe the athleticism was better than people realized, Mel. I don't think he's going to be confused with any of the guys at the top of the board athletically. Certainly the top three quarterbacks are all terrific athletes, but if there's at least more functional athletic ability, Mel, than maybe I even estimated for Michael Penix Jr. going into the pro day.
Yeah, I think when you look at Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., they're older, right? They played a lot of college football. And some people think, well, what do you expect? You play college football that long, you're going to put up the numbers. So Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. did that. Bo Nix at Auburn, goes to Oregon, look at the results. Michael Penix Jr., Indiana, then Washington, look at what happened. But then you look at J.J. McCarthy and Drake May, young quarterbacks, right, that has, they're still playing great football, but very young, and don't have all the starts that those two do. So I think you have to look at that, and some teams look at it as a negative. Hey, what do you expect? They're playing against college kids. They're 23, 24 years of age. Penix Jr., 23, Bo Nix, 24. What do you expect, right? But then you could also look at it as a positive. The more starts, the more ready you are to get into the NFL and make a quick impression as a starter in the National Football League.
I'll put a pin in the quarterbacks here, Mel. I think if you gave me an over-under on number of quarterbacks that go in the first round, I would set that number at 4.5, that line at 4.5, and I would take the over at 5. I think 5 find their way in. I'm not totally convinced that both Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. go in the first round of the NFL draft, but I do think it's possible that one of those two goes in the first round. And of course, as we know, between Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy, we have 4 locks. Very quick recap thoughts here, Mel, on other prospects at the Washington Pro Day. Rome Odunze stood on his times from the combine. They were outstanding. Why bother? If it wasn't broken, don't fix it. And the two offensive tackles, Mel, nothing that you and I haven't talked about already in our evaluations of Troy Fatutanu and also Roger Rosengarten. And obviously we've watched plenty of tape on those two players, but it is a sight to be seen watching these two men move in space. They are not your average offensive tackles athletically. We think Fatutanu is a lock in the first round. We think Rosengarten is a lock to go in the first 2 rounds, and they certainly look the part there in Seattle on Thursday. Those two men can move. They are incredibly fluid. Let me just say, there is just a bunch of rock star humans at that Washington football program. I don't know that you can collectively measure football character, but it had to be very close to the top of the NCAA last year because there were some excellent players and some excellent people as well. All right, that's enough on the Washington Pro Day. If you didn't get to see the highlights, you can probably find them on ESPN Plus somewhere, but the headline was, of course, Michael Penix Jr., who threw the ball well and was more athletic than he was given credit for. But coming up next year, Mel, you and I are going to dive into your updated top 25. We're going from 25 to 1, and people, I can promise you, there are some notable names that we will discuss. That's coming up next here on First Draft. All right, back here on First Draft, he's Mel Kiper Jr. I am Field Yates. And Mel, we're diving into your top 25 that was just uploaded. It was just updated. It is now not set in stone, but getting closer to it because we're now 3.5 weeks away from the NFL draft. Let's begin, Mel, with a name that was not previously in your top 25, but he now registers at number 25. He has been in your mocks of late. Tell America more about what they need to know about Iowa State corner TJ Tampa.
I really like this kid, Field. Maybe I do more than anybody else. Really think he can be a heck of a corner in the NFL. People are going to knock him. Well, he doesn't have the 4.4 speed. You know, he's a 4.52 guy. Well, guess what? Jalen Johnson came out of Utah in 2020, right? Ran 4.5, right? He was 6 feet. TJ Tampa, 6'1", 189. TJ Tampa has more length. He's a tremendous athlete. He's really smart, really instinctive. Former high school wide receiver. Played in 46 games at Iowa State. Think about 3 interceptions over the last 2 years, but 16 pass breakups over the last 2 years. Gets his hands on a lot of balls. He's a tackler as well. He's smart, okay, and he's a worker. Teammates really respect his work ethic and passion for the game. I look at TJ Tampa to me as a first-round caliber player. He's a 25 for a reason. I like him that much. Will he go in the first? Debatable right now, Field, because of the fact he doesn't have that 4.4, 4.45 speed, right? But he is fast enough, and he plays faster than he times because he's so instinctive. And he has incredible, incredible hip flexibility. So when you look at TJ Tampa, don't worry about mock drafts. I could care less. I had him in the last mock draft in the late first round. Maybe he gets bumped to the second round. Okay, goes between, well, Jalen Johnson went 50, yeah. Okay? 50 in the second round. How's it developed for Jalen Johnson? Right, we had 4.5, 40 time, and he's an inch shorter than TJ Tampa. TJ Tampa in the second round, if he gets to the second round, and maybe he will, and I don't rate players based on where they're going to go. I don't really care. I put him at 25, not as a Kiper stunt, because there's validity to how good he is and how good he will be in the NFL, despite not having the 4.28 or 4.35 speed. What Wiggins was 4.28, other guys running the 4.4 range. TJ Tampa plays a lot faster than 4.52.
By the way, there are plenty of people that are wondering how this top 25 comes together. We mentioned earlier, like, there is, it's how you see it. But obviously, when we were talking about people throughout the, or talking to people throughout the NFL, it's good to get a sense of where things could be heading in their estimation. TJ Tampa, 25, just to run through the full 6, and then we'll dive into a few more in this bracket. Byron Murphy II from Texas at 24. Nate Wiggins, the corner you just mentioned from Clemson at 23. Tyler Guyton, big offensive tackle from Oklahoma at 22. Cooper DeJean, who I mentioned will have a private pro day in the middle of April, about 10 days out from the NFL draft. He comes in at number 21. And then Jared Verse, the Florida State edge rusher, at number 20. All right, so I wanted to get to number 22 here, Mel, because it's somebody that, as you know, I've been harping on for quite some time here in the pre-draft process. It's Tyler Guyton, number 22 overall, so obviously one of your highest-rated offensive tackles as well. Here's where I wanted to start, Mel, is when I watch Tyler Guyton, I go back and forth on how certain I am that he is ready versus raw. There are times when you watch him, you think to yourself, this looks like a player who had one full season as a starter this past year at Oklahoma. There are other times where you say to yourself, so much of what he does, you can't teach, and this guy might be ready to roll sooner rather than later. Where did you sort of net out on Tyler Guyton, and how did he end up at number 22 on your big board?
Just on potential field, he is a 6'7.5", 322 athletic talent, right? Talk about the length, you talk about basketball background, excellent basketball player in high school. Think about a defensive lineman most of his high school career. Think about H-back doing all that at TCU. Comes to Oklahoma, now he's coached very well there at Oklahoma, right? You think about where he will be in a couple years. He played a little left tackle already, but he's a right tackle, right? Doesn't have a ton of starts. You wish you would have seen him another year at Oklahoma, okay? Then we would have probably been talking about a top 10 to 15 pick, not a 20 to 25 pick field. So for Tyler Guyton, you're basing on where he will be, not where he is right now. And where he is right now is a raw talent. He's inconsistent. Technique needs to be worked on a little bit. And the experience. You can't coach up a player to a point yet where he has peaked when he hasn't had the experience at that spot. As I said, played defensive line most of his prep career, then the H-back, then he plays a little left tackle, but then he's a right tackle. But he's a guy, I think, has that ability to maybe be a Pro Bowl caliber player, but there's also a risk reward. You take him too high, okay? Are you gambling maybe a little too much and he can't get to that point? With another year, he would have been that guy. Or is that raw, you know, inconsistent technique going to hamper him at the pro level field? He's a tough one to really project and evaluate, but on talent and on potential, I put him at 22.
All right, so Mel, I have the two-round mock draft, and while you may not care about mock drafts, Mel, I know a lot of people that are watching or listening to this do care a lot about mock drafts, and so part of my calculus in terms of where I fit Tyler Guyton into my two-round mock was finding a team that did not necessarily need him right this second. Because while I said there are days in which he looks like he's closer to being ready, I do think there are enough people around the NFL that feel as though Tyler Guyton could really use, maybe not a full redshirt season, but at least a slower entrance into the starting lineup than some of the other tackles that we're going to talk about in just a little bit. So keep that in mind when the mock draft drops on Wednesday morning. And also keep this in mind, people. I understand the excitement about a mock draft, especially one that involves a first round, because everybody wants to fill their team's biggest need. And I get it. GM shelf lives are seemingly shorter than ever these days, so a lot more people are acting urgently. But anybody in the NFL scouting world will tell you, Mel, that the purpose of the draft is not merely to fill your holes, but also to build out your long-term needs. So there might be teams who don't necessarily need Tyler Guyton to start right this second, that might be interested in Tyler Guyton in the first round. Yes, a premium pick on a player that may not start right away. And if I have learned anything in following this league closely over the past decade plus in the ESPN world, it's that offensive line depth is incredibly hard to find. All right, last one here in this bracket, Mel, is Jared Verse, number 20 right now from Florida State. This is going to sound almost unfair to him, but do you feel as though Jared Verse is a player whose ceiling is a little bit lower relative to some of the guys that you have ranked higher because he's going to be 24 soon. He's been around college for a long time and isn't quite as fluid of an athlete as some of the other edge rushers in this class.
Yeah, he's a hard evaluation field because he is a powerhouse. He did it at Albany, right? He had those 9.5 sacks in 2021, 18 sacks, 30 tackles for loss the last 2 years at Florida State. The punch, okay? That phenomenal initial burst, that first step quickness. He plays hard. He plays with great effort, right? We talk about the powerhouse. He is super strong, right? You are not going to move him off the line of scrimmage. He will seal that edge. He will do everything against the run you need him to do. He will hustle. He will play hard from start to finish. The tightness in the hips, turning the corner. finishing, getting those sacks, okay? Closing, finishing, so important. At the end of a half, end of a game, will the tightness in the hips be something he can work through? I mean, you don't even notice it in the NFL because you noticed it at Florida State, you noticed it in the workout. So, again, two schools, Albany, then he jumps up to Florida State. The production never waned, okay? He did it at a low level. He did it at the highest level, yep. Okay? So, for Jared Verse, I love his attitude, love his approach, love everything about it. If it wasn't the tightness in the hips field, you'd be talking about a top 10 pick in the first round. Yeah. Now you're talking about a guy who goes between probably 10 and maybe 20 somewhere in that area of round one. He'd have been maybe the fifth pick overall if it wasn't for that.
Yeah, certainly love the player, Mel. I mean, there's a chance that this guy has as much of an instant impact of any of the first round edge rushing prospects because of just how pro ready his game is, right? What you see is what you get with Jared Verse. And so I'm not in any ways trying to knock him. I'm just trying to explain why if you see a mini fall for Jared Verse, not a significant one. You talked about maybe the floor being pick 20, but like if he ends up being the fourth edge rusher taken, when some people thought going into the season he was the clear-cut best edge rusher in the class, it might be because some people feel as though there are a couple of guys who just have more upside at that edge rushing spot relative to Jared Verse, but a great player with a ton of character. As you mentioned, what a path from being a walk-on tight end at Albany to a guy who finished his career at Florida State and part of that absolutely dominant defensive front for the Seminoles. All right, coming up, we are going to dive into players number 19 through 14 and a little teaser. That includes a quarterback who, depending on who you talk to, is rising really, really far up the boards or just rising up the boards a little bit. More on Mel Kiper Jr.'s updated top 25 when First Draft rolls around in just a few moments.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts, for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, back here on First Draft. He's Mel Kiper Jr. Field Yates here with you as well. Breaking down Mel's top 25. And Mel, we're going to take a look at six more players. And that includes some guys who I do think have risen up your boards of late. 19 to 14 are as follows. Terrion Arnold, corner from Alabama. Tali Fuaga, offensive tackle from Oregon State. Xavier Worthy, the fastest player ever at the Combine from Texas at 17. Olu Fashanu at 16, the offensive tackle from Penn State. Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback from Toledo at number 15. And then number 14 is J.J. McCarthy, quarterback from Michigan. We're going to get to him in just a little bit here, Mel. But let's start with Xavier Worthy, who has flown up your board much like he flew at the Combine. Do you think as though he has separated himself as the clear-cut number 6 wide receiver in this entire draft class, number 5 wide receiver? Where does he rank on your wide receiver big board?
I think he will be either right where Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU is or slightly ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. After we talk about that big three field, okay, of Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Romo Odunze, he could be right in the mix as that next guy. You can't teach your coach the speed. When you have a guy like this, can he control his speed? He can control it. Is he consistent catching the football? Yes, for the most part, he is. You had the broken hand, and he had some drops 2 years ago with that late in the year. When he's healthy, he is a guy, is a fear X-factor player. 4-2-1 speed translates to the field. You can get him on jet sweeps, reverses, get him in space, move him around, and he is a nightmare to try to corral in the open field. So for me, the 165 in terms of this is his weight. Yes, is it a concern? Would you like him to be 175, 180? Yeah, okay. But what you have here is a dynamic player who is a guy who gives you a great attitude, great approach. He is tough. I watched this kid on tape, and what I like, Fielder, is when a guy doesn't shy away from contact. Say, you wish he would a little bit protect that body at 165, but he's a tough kid. We know how tough Malik Nabers is, right? Xavier Worthy's right behind him. So I love the kid. I mean, people will knock him for being 165, fine. I think you make a strong argument after the big three. He's next in line. He also has the return ability. You are going to get production with this kid, and you can utilize him in a lot of different ways.
Now, I'm admittedly lower on my overall big board. You'll see where Xavier Worthy finds his way in the two-round mock on Wednesday. But I have him in the 30s in my top 50, which dropped over the weekend, Mel. And you know exactly what I'm going to say because you said it yourself. It's the body type. There are just so few players that have thrived and excelled at 165 pounds. I believe strongly this, though, Mel, is that Xavier Worthy needs to go somewhere where he's not expected to be the number one wide receiver in short order. Because there are some teams that are picking pretty high that need a number one wide receiver. I think Xavier Worthy would be better suited to be a number two wide receiver in a capable, thriving offense, which if you get into the 20s, there are a bunch of teams that already have that number one pass catcher that could really use some help at that number two or number three complementary spot. One thing you did see on that tape that I think is important to mention, and you've kind of highlighted this, is that it's one thing to be fast, Mel. It's another thing to actually put that speed to good use. And Xavier Worthy can really track that deep ball. I mean, his ability to beat defenders is unquestioned. But he probably does not get enough credit for being way past defenders and then finding that deep ball. And Quinn Ewers, a guy we'll talk a lot about next year from Texas, the quarterback, very, very bright future for Quinn Ewers, but was not terrific throwing the deep ball this past season. That has been something that people that have studied these Texas wide receivers have noted time and again when breaking down Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell specifically. All right, the next one here, Mel, I'm going to use this as a jumping off point for two separate corners. You have Quinyon Mitchell going number 15. You have Terron Arnold number 19 overall. I think this is a bit of a dip for Arnold. What is the sort of logic behind dropping Arnold? Not necessarily behind Quinyon Mitchell, but do you think that he ends up going closer to 20 than he does 10th overall?
Corners will get pushed up a little bit, Field. I think Quinyon Mitchell, to me, he's CB1 because he didn't have any red flag. There was nothing you could knock him on, Field. You can't knock him on the season. You can say, well, it's Toledo. Then you were at the Senior Bowl. We're watching him, right? And he lights out. He's locking down. Then he goes to the combine. He runs that 4-3-3. The pass breakups, the ball skills there, obviously, you see it on film. You'll watch him every time they play. They jump out at you. Then you talk about, will he tackle? Yes, he will. He has the awareness. He has the anticipation. He has all that. I always say dropping the interceptions is a turnover against you. You can't have that. This kid will come through with the turnover when the situation presents itself. He does not have any area when you go season, All-Star game, which was Senior Bowl week, and then you go to the combine. He didn't miss, and he didn't have any question marks at any point. So for me, when you look at Toledo, Mid-American Conference, hey, I get it. Okay, Terron Arnold, SEC, Alabama, coached by Nick Saban. I see that. But Terron Arnold ran at 4.5. If you're going to separate him, 4.3, 4.5. You get two players equal. Yes, it does separate. That's why I don't have TJ Tamp up here as the second or third highest rated corner on my board, right? Yeah. I got other guys a little bit ahead of them. So if they're equal, you go with the faster guy. Quinyon Mitchell, 4.3, Terron Arnold, 4.5. It's an easy decision.
By the way, I do think that both of these players will go a little bit lower in the actual draft than where I have them in my top 25, top 50, I should say, Mel, just because I do think the quarterback, wide receiver, and offensive tackle run at the beginning of the draft is going to leave some really good players at different positions available a little lower than where you would normally expect them to go. Along those lines, let's talk about the quarterback that has now made his way to number 14 on your big board, Mel. That, of course, is J.J. McCarthy at Michigan. And I have to ask this, Mel, because I will be the first to admit, I have moved J.J. up my board a little bit, in part because of the influence from people around the league telling me, Field, you need to move him further up your board because he's going to go higher than where you have him rated. Now, I get it. There's part of me that feels like that's a little bit disingenuous to move it up if you don't see it as strongly as they do, Mel, but our goal is to try to give people a reflection of where we think these players are going to go. How much of JJ being at 14 is how much you like Mel versus how much you think the league likes JJ McCarthy?
I could care less for you. The rationale here is getting the gap, closing that gap between Drake May and JJ McCarthy. That was my goal in terms of that ranking, moving it. I didn't feel comfortable with a huge gap between JJ and Drake. So it really had nothing to do. We know he's going to go probably in the top six overall. So I think when you look at the gap between Drake May and JJ McCarthy, I wanted to close it a little bit. That's why he's at 14. He's not going to get any higher. That's as high as he's going to go. So he's at 14. We know he's going to go in the top six. To me, that's overdrafting. So I wasn't going to push him up any higher, but I didn't want to have McCarthy at 25 and Drake May in the top 10 on the big board. Didn't want to have that differential there. That's why I made that move.
Okay, yeah. And there's a million things we could say about this JJ McCarthy evaluation, because I think the reality is, Mel, that as you said, he is going higher. He's probably going to go in the first six selections overall. That's where the New York Giants are currently slated to pick. But between the first three teams that, of course, need a quarterback, the possibility for a trade-up, those Minnesota Vikings are lurking with picks 11 and 23 now at their disposal. I'll just say, I haven't picked player number 21 on my big board now. So he moved up a few notches at the encouragement of people saying, I know how you feel. I also think you need to dig a little bit deeper on JJ McCarthy. And there are some traits, Mel, that you and I don't have as much access to just watching the film, that people around the NFL have highlighted, that they have said, this stuff is exceptional. You've talked about his toughness and his competitiveness and his leadership. That's only been reaffirmed. And his pro day actually was the rare quarterback pro day, Mel, where I thought there was something that I could learn. Given the fact that J.J. McCarthy was so infrequently asked to be the center of attention in that Michigan offense, it was a chance for him to be at the center of attention, and he did throw the football very, very well. So J.J. McCarthy at number 14 overall here. Mel, I mentioned two offensive tackles as well. Any parting thoughts here on J.J. McCarthy before we move forward to the final 13?
Well, I'll tie J.J. McCarthy into Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix, because Denver, okay, and Minnesota. Minnesota at 11, Denver at 12, right? What are they going to do? Are they going to make a move? Is somebody going to have to be picked by, say, Denver? If Minnesota sits at 11, what are they going to do? Okay, they have Sam Darnold. You think about Denver with Jarrett Stidham. Denver at 12 doesn't have a second-round pick. Are they going to take a quarterback if J.J. McCarthy's gone? Is it going to be Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. to the Denver Broncos at 12? It's going to be really fascinating to see what they do there. Or if they like them both, do they trade down just a bit? I think it's going to be really fun to see Minnesota 11, Denver 12, what they end up doing, because both need a quarterback.
It feels like the floor for quarterback four, which we think is J.J. McCarthy, is pick number 12. And it turns out the ceiling, Mel, might be a whole lot higher than that. We are anxiously awaiting Adam Schefter to break some sort of news of a trade that involves a team moving up the board that kind of tips their hand that they are in the business of a quarterback at the very top of the draft. All right, coming up, the final 13 players in Mel's top 25, beginning with a pass rusher that deserves some more love. All right, back here on First Draft, he is Mel Kiper Jr. I am Field Yates, and we are rolling through his top 25. We have reached the final 13, Mel, and we begin with Leiatu Latu. And you know how much this one is just going to hurt my heart. We'll talk about it in a second. Number 12, J.C. Latham from Alabama. Number 11, Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. Number 10, Dallas Turner from Alabama, the edge. Number 9, Troy Fautanu, offensive lineman from Washington. Joe Alt, offensive tackle from Notre Dame at number 8. And Drake May, number 7, quarterback from North Carolina. Many more thoughts on that in just a few moments. Let's break down Leiatu Latu, though, Mel, because love the player, love the tape. I think he's the best defensive player in the class on film, but he has this major medical question. 13th overall for you. Does that feel in line with where you think he'll end up being drafted?
Yeah, I love Latu. I think when you look at what he did certainly at UCLA with the 23 and a half sacks, 34 tackles for loss, and 5 forced fumbles field, coming off the edge, being disruptive. You could say he's the best pass rusher in this draft. Natural, slippery, great bend, has counter moves, plays hard, gets off blocks, finds the ball. To me, the production, you talk about going up against some good offensive tackles and getting it done. I think this kid, if it wasn't for the neck injury, you were talking about a top 10, top 12 pick. I think he deserves to be rated where I have him. The medical's obviously been an issue all along, but for 2 years at UCLA, he was getting into that backfield. He can close, he can finish, and being able to be instinctive and locate the football, he can do that. The effort's there. I understand what we're talking about some people think maybe in the 20s he falls down that far, and he could, but I'm rating him based on ability. I'm assuming that moving forward, he's not going to have any issues with his medical situation, and if he can stay on the field, this is going to really help the defense, because every team, these pass rushers, multiple guys can get after the quarterback, and we know Latu has proven he can do that.
Yeah, Mel, I think if he stays healthy, he's going to end up being a double-digit sack artist many years in his career. He's just that refined and talented as a rusher. It's nice to have these traits, to be explosive, to be long, to be springy. It's another thing to actually know what you're doing out there, because there are a lot of guys who are good athletes that are in this year's NFL draft. Not nearly as many of them are as skilled as Leiatu Latu is. I think there's a chance he slides lower than where you have him ranked, 13th. It's about where I have him ranked as well, Mel. But I wanted to mention this, and I hope this happens. And I hadn't thought about this as much, and maybe I should have. His former head coach at Washington, Jimmy Lake, now the defensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. Everybody's sitting here basically telling Dallas Turner to move into Atlanta already, because there's no way the Falcons are passing him. I wonder if Leiatu Latu to the Falcons could make some sense at number 8 overall. Certainly Jimmy Lake knows his game about as well as anybody. A couple spots ahead of him, Mel, is Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. Number 11 overall, fourth wide receiver. Does that mean that you kind of view him as sort of nipping on the heels of your third overall wide receiver, whoever that is? Or is there still a pretty clear divide between Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze in some order, and then that next tier of wideouts?
Great question, Field. You framed it perfectly, because there's fluidity for me with Brian Thomas Jr. in terms of ranking. I think I have him a little too high at 11. Okay. I may move him down just a bit. I was thinking about that over the weekend. I want to have more of a gap between, you know, a Rome Odunze and a Brian Thomas Jr., my third receiver, which is right there with Malik Nabers, Odunze is, and Brian Thomas Jr., and getting where Worthy is, and maybe have Worthy ahead of Thomas. Brian Thomas Jr. had a great year, no doubt about it. 68 catches, 17.3 yard average, and 17 touchdowns. But, the first 2 years, he had 59 catches for a 12-yard average and 7 touchdowns. That's combined. So he did something this year he had never done before. Average per catch up from 12 yards to 17+. Touchdowns up from 7 over 2 years to 17 in 1 year, okay? So the production jumped dramatically. 6'3", 210, 38.5 vertical, 4.33 speed, could get a little stronger. But tracking the deep ball for Jaden Daniels, put it out there, and he showed that even at the pro day. He can do all that, Field. He's a great center fielder, right? He can go, he can play shallow, and he can get to that wall, and he can make that leap and prevent a home run. He can go track the ball. We get that. Will he be a complete receiver in the National Football League? He is basically a one-year wonder, yep. Okay? And will he be complete and do all the other things you need to do as a receiver against these big-time physical corners in the NFL? That's why I'm going to probably push him down just a bit when my final rankings come out. He may be around 15 to 18 area. 11 right now, to me, this weekend felt a little high for Brian Thomas Jr.
Look, like a little self-evaluation on the fly here from Mel Kiper Jr. That's an impressive performance right there. You know, Mel, I think in a different year, 11th might be okay for Brian Thomas Jr. And by the way, I'm not saying it's some sort of insane take at 11th overall. The guy, as you mentioned, 6'2", 196, ran a 4.33 40. I think the best accelerator in the class, maybe the best deep ball threat in the entire class as well. I mean, the number of effortless 40-plus yard catches this guy made last season is kind of ridiculous. And those 17 touchdowns that you referenced, the most in FBS, also pretty darn impressive. He might see, and again, nothing's a guarantee, he might see a mini dip, though, only because of the fact that there are so many offensive tackles and other wide receivers, and quarterbacks that could go a little bit higher. Along those lines, Mel, I wanted to save some time for this one. Drake May, number 7 overall for you from North Carolina. 7 is still a very high portion of the board, Mel. I'm not trying to say that this is what you have been saying, but as we get closer to the draft, Mel, I've started to sense more questions around Drake May than I can personally find myself when evaluating him. Where have you landed with Drake? I understand he's 7th on the board. Where does that sort of translate to if you were to sort of describe it in words beyond just the number?
I think Drake, with another year at North Carolina, you know how young he is, I think he would have taken off because he did have games late in the year where we know about the accuracy and the precise passing was off. Even the pro day, he missed a couple throws early, but they got in a rhythm and he was lights out. So for North Carolina, when he got in that rhythm, he was outstanding. He was phenomenal, right? But he had some games where it took him a while to get into that flow. And to me, and he had a couple receivers. He had, Tez Walker after the fourth game. He had Nesbitt, who's a good tight end. He had Hampton at running back, who's a heck of a player. So for me, this year, it just wasn't that scintillating performance. It wasn't that wow performance later in the season. Now, you say, does he need to sit for a year? I think he does. I don't think he's going to be ready to set the world on fire in the NFL. I think another year at North Carolina would have made him in line to be the number one, number two pick overall, which he is right now as really three. We're talking about the third pick overall. He probably will be. But on the ratings board, I have him at 7 because I didn't see late in the year against opponents where he had time to throw. He had receivers open. And he was misfiring. And he has to speed up that delivery a bit as well. So with a year, like Mahomes had a year. Patrick Mahomes had a year to sit, watch, and learn. If Drake May gets that, he could be an outstanding NFL quarterback. I don't think he's there yet. He's got to keep getting better, and I think he will because he's got a tremendous work ethic and passion for the game of football.
Yeah, Mel, so I have a little bit. I am 5th overall on my big board, and I don't know if I'm going to adjust that at all between now and the NFL draft. I think the lowest I would go would be number 6, which might be just as much about a certain wide receiver that is currently in number 6 that could move up to number 5. But I just think this might be happening to Drake May, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I am overthinking it myself. But I find that as we get closer to the draft, and with such a big window from the end of the season to the draft itself, sometimes we get into the overthinking process, analysis paralysis, right? Where guys who we thought all throughout the fall were really good all of a sudden come under a microscope, more mouths talking about this player, and all of a sudden there seems to be more question marks around Drake May. I'm here to state my case. I'm holding steady. Drake May, clear-cut number 3 quarterback in the draft to me. If he falls to number 3 and the Patriots are there, I say, Commissioner Goodell, thank you. Drake May, welcome to New England. That's where I land on that. All right, any closing thoughts on the players 13 through 7, Mel, before we head over to the final 6 and, of course, the crown jewels of the class?
I love J.C. Latham. I think that right tackle who has a skill set to be a left tackle is going to go a little higher. And I had him at 5-1 mock to the Chargers. And Troy Fa'utanu from Washington, one of my favorite players in the draft. Just if you want to be entertaining, I would say entertaining offensive lineman to watch. He's at or near the top of the list field. So Troy Fa'utanu is going to play a long time in the NFL. He's got that ability to be a tackle, but a guard, a Pro Bowl guard. I like him a lot. And I also like, we'll talk about at the end of the show, Roger Rosengarten, that right tackle at Washington. Everybody was laughing and mocking me for having him in the first round field. Guess what? He's going to go pretty high.
I think he will go pretty high. I do know that he makes the top 2-round mock draft that I will be dropping on Wednesday morning on ESPN.com. All right, so coming up next, we are going to dive into Mel's final 6 prospects on his big board. All these guys are really, really good, but one notable change that I wanted to ask, actually 2 of them I wanted to ask Mel about. Coming up, final 6 players in Mel Kiper Jr.'s top 25. That's next year on First Draft. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number 1 pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be. All right, we're back here on First Draft. Mel Kiper Jr., I am Field Yates. We have reached the final 6 players in Mel's top 25. Mel, the only one that I think is actually fairly quick and we don't have to talk about a whole lot is Brock Bowers, number 6, Roma Dunze, number 5, Malik Nabers, number 4, Marvin Harrison Jr., number 3, Jaden Daniels, number 2, and Caleb Williams, number 1. I don't have any questions about Brock Bowers, so if you want to say anything, here's your chance to say nice things about Brock Bowers.
Not much to say that I haven't said before, Field. I get tired of hearing this nonsense. He's just a tight end. Give me a break. He's just a tight end. He's everything. Watch him play. At TE there, tight end? No, he's everything, okay? You can use him in the backfield. You can put him anywhere on the football field. He's a nightmare to try to match up with. So, yeah, I don't care where he goes. He's going to be a whale of a pick. He could be in line to be Rookie of the Year in the NFL if he goes to the right team and the right quarterback. So, I love Brock Bowers. Loved him when he came to Georgia. He was an instant, immediate impact performer, a star. Immediately, a star is born the first day he stepped on that field between the hedges at Georgia for Kirby Smart. I don't know how you put him any lower than where I maybe 9-10 on the big board. I don't know how you get him out of the top 10. And I think he is the sixth best player. I think it's sixth best player in this draft. Virtual, forget positional value. If you're telling me you have a player like Brock Bowers, and we look at the value of Travis Kelce and Kittle and Andrews, and the list goes on and on, right? Those guys, and they were all bargains where they were taken, by the way, okay? Remember, Hockenson went in the top 10. He went, I believe, 8 overall.
8 overall, yeah.
Detroit Lions, T.J. Hockenson did. So this notion that Brock Bowers can't go in the top 10, it's never – forget Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts was one of those all-around guys, too. But T.J. Hockenson went 8th overall not that long ago. Yeah. I like Brock Bowers better than I did T.J. Hockenson. I liked Hockenson. I like Brock Bowers a little bit better. That's why he's at 6.
Mel, I just think in the same way that we were talking about, J.J. McCarthy might go higher than our rankings. There's a chance, because of the quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle run, that Bowers goes a little bit lower than where we have him ranked. I have him 8th overall on my big board. All right, so I don't want to belabor this one, Mel, because you still love both of these players. But have you officially flipped Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers in your wide receiver rankings?
This drives me crazy, Field, when I hear this stuff. Oh, yeah, not – this was this close.
It's what so did close. I do, Field? I don't want to belabor it.
You listen. I know you're – the separation when you have two players that are equal, right? If I'm sitting, is the speed. Yeah. I went with the speed. I went with the explosiveness. I went with the fact that you get the ball in his hands and he can do so much. Rome Odunze is a different kind. He's a great player. I love Rome, and I'm probably going to regret moving Rome to 3. But I do think, and I said this a lot over the last couple of years, you put these three guys in a hat, the names of Harrison, Odunze, and Nabers, Field, and you pick one of those out of the hat, I think no matter who you pick, you're going to end up with a hell of a player. I really do. And I think we've had years like this before, going back into the 80s and 90s, where three guys went and three guys starred in the National Football League. Rome Odunze is phenomenal. He's silky smooth. He's consistent. He does everything on the football field. I love the kid. So, and Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm loyal to a fault, and I have Marvin Harrison Jr. up there from the start to the finish, not changing that. So all three of these guys, you could put these guys on the board field, on the big board. You can put them at 1, 2, 3. You can put them at 2, 3, 4. I'm at 3, 4, 5, Field. But you can't have them out of the top 5, my friend. You got to have these three receivers somewhere in the top 5 overall on any big board.
Mel, I have no strong disagreement because I do believe that you are choosing between like a 99, a 98.5, and a 98 in terms of overall grades for these three players. The last question before we get into some players that did not make the list, Mel, is that I also see that Jaden Daniels is now number 2 overall on your big board. That's actually where I have him as well, as you and I have the exact same top 4. Why Jaden now over Marvin Harrison Jr.? Was this about positional value, or what was this about?
This is all about putting him right next to the player that I can't separate. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. with Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze is right there.
Yeah.
Those three are, you're splitting hairs with all three of them, Field. And I think with Caleb and with Jaden, you're right there as well. So I just wanted to get him in a position where there's no separation. They're there, they're equal. A slight edge to Marvin Harrison Jr., then Malik, and then Rome. And Caleb maintains that top spot. But Jaden, for the way he brought, and at one hesitancy for me is the fact that I had him as a 4th rounder going into this year. You say, well, that was way off. He shouldn't have been there. Joe Burrow, where was Joe Burrow going into his final year at LSU, Field? He wasn't as highly rated as he was that final year when he went number 1 overall. Wasn't even close to it. So Jaden Daniels' progression at LSU mirrored what Joe Burrow did. And that's why you see it right there. I mean, go from 17 touchdowns to 40. 6 completion percentage. Ideal each year, no problem there, right? Yardage way up. The 4th quarter numbers were outstanding. 10 touchdowns, 2 picks, and 3 rushing touchdowns in the 4th quarter. And oh, by the way, in the 4th quarter, he completed 73% of his passes. Drake May was at 62%. Michael Penix Jr. was at 59%. So when it matters the most in the 4th quarter, and it did for LSU because their defense couldn't stop anybody, that's when Jaden Daniels is at his best. So I don't like going fourth round, the number two on the big board. But, hey, I kind of did it with Joe Burrow. That worked out pretty good.
It did, Mel. Here's the reality is that there are players that have 4 years of starting experience that end up not playing well in the NFL. So you can't say that 1 year of dominant play is enough to say that the guy can't become a star. Joe Burrow is one example, but there are certainly plenty of other players that fit into that mold as well. I have the exact same top four as you, so no arguments here. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison Jr., and also Malik Nabers. Let's get to a few players that maybe you had a hard time leaving out, Mel. Who are they?
Xavier Leggett, wide receiver, South Carolina. We talked about Brian Thomas Jr. If you're going to put Brian Thomas Jr. at 11 field, and he's a one-year wonder, yep. Xavier Leggett's a one-year wonder. He had been a great kickoff returner. That's what you hang your hat on, 30-yard average per kickoff return, right? But as a receiver, he hadn't done a lot. Well, he did a lot this year to impress. So Xavier Leggett, wide receiver, South Carolina. Graham Barton, left tackle, Duke, played some center. Versatile interior lineman. Graham Barton, tough to leave off. Then you go to Braden Fisk. Defensive tackle, Florida State, formerly Western Michigan. Super disruptive, right? What's the one concern field? Short arms, right? Size, so you say, okay, leave him off the top 25 because of that, right? Then I go to my guy, Roger Rosengarten. Like the kid a lot. 25, though, maybe just a little high. I think he's more of in that 30 to 37 range. So when I do the overall top 300, okay, when that ranking comes out, he'll be, as I say, between that 28-35 range. But I think Roger Rosengarten deserves some, basically, thought process of being in the top 25 to 30. Now, it's no longer field, that Kuiper stunt. I don't know if you're hearing, because you're talking to all your guys, but Roger Rosengarten's name comes up a little more. And nobody really cares what I think. Okay, they don't care.
Sure they do.
But I'm hearing a little bit more of Rosengarten going in the at worst in the mid-second round.
Yeah, that's what I hear as well. Said he's a second-round lock, which doesn't mean he's going to go. He could go in the first, but there's no way he falls out of the second round, in part because of all those teams that still need right tackle options. If they don't get them in the first, teams like Cincinnati and San Francisco and Baltimore, all examples of teams that could use a second-round pick on an offensive tackle. We have 1 minute left here, Mel, and I just want to say that a couple of the guys that I was missing in there that I wish I could have seen, A.D. Mitchell, wide receiver from Texas, and Penn State pass rusher Chop Robinson, a quick retort. Did either one of those players come across your mind for this top 25?
Adonai Mitchell get a little stronger, and I think that obviously the consistent catch of the football was outstanding. And for Chop Robinson, the lack of great production, shorter arms than you prefer, but lack of great production off the edge, despite having all those great computer measurables, numbers, and all that. I wanted to see more on the field getting it done at Penn State. That's why he's not in the top 25 right now.
I agree with what you said about Chop Robinson, and yet I still think there's a chance he goes inside the top 20 picks of the NFL draft by the time it is all said and done. He's the great Mel Kiper Jr. That is his top 25. We are back on Thursday. Make sure to check out First Draft wherever you get your podcast. Mock 2.0 drops on Wednesday. We'll talk to you guys again